Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Man, we had a lot of action this weekend. Some spectacular knockouts, some upsets, and a lot of things to discuss. And of course, we are going to have some of the best in the business here to discuss this with us. Referring to Mr. John, the Iceman Scully, known around all boxing circles. Also, we're going to have the champ, Mr. Lamar Brewster, in tonight. Unfortunately, Chris can't make it tonight, so we will be joined by Scully and Lamar. And hopefully my host will be in soon, and we'll also have Jabron on tonight. So right now, let's introduce the Iceman. Not that he needs an introduction, but hey, what's going on tonight, Mr. Scully?
Just got done watching a movie and getting ready to get back in the gym tomorrow, and that's about it.
Well, did you get a chance to see some of the Friday and Saturday night action this weekend, man?
Nah, I'm actually in the process of changing my whole TV system around, so I didn't have access to the stations. But I heard about it. I had actually picked Frampton to win, but I guess our guy made his adjustments and did his thing.
I would say Leo made the adjustments that he had to make in order to win the fight. I don't think this was necessarily Frampton's best. Possibly he may have waited a little bit too long before he really started pressuring Leo. But more than anything, I think what really improved for Leo was his footwork more than anything else. But I see my co-host is here, Mr. Jabron Clement. Jabron, what's going on tonight?
Not much. Great. Another great weekend of boxing. Can't complain.
I definitely hear that. I wanted to start a little bit with the Friday night fights, but since Mr. Scully brought him up he was saying he had picked Frampton to win. Jabron, what did you take out of that fight? And do you think this was a fight where Frampton was more or less, meant to fail?
Say that again.
Do you think that Frampton was meant to fail? And I'm not saying that the fight was fixed or anything like that. But what I'm saying is, we all kind of went into that fight expecting it to be a trilogy. And the only way that it could be a trilogy was if Frampton lost. So what I'm thinking is, even Frampton kind of came in. I don't think he came in with the same confidence that he came in with the first fight with Leo. So, maybe I'm wrong, but what do you think?
No, I mean, he had confidence. He was confident. It was just that it was just that Leo made some adjustments from the first fight to the second fight. And Frampton wasn't expecting that. He, you know, he pretty much expected the same type of fighter, like, you know, a pressure fighter, which Leo has been throughout his whole career. So, I mean, he done something that he's really never done before, and that's be a patient boxer.
Well, see, now, yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of making my case there, John, because as you said, Frampton didn't adjust, and I think the mark of a true champion is when he's able to adjust and not expect the same thing from his opponent. So, you know, am I being a little harsh here, or, you know?
Well, he tried to make some adjustments, but Santa Cruz will offset his adjustment, you know? So I wouldn't say he didn't make any adjustments. He made some adjustments, but Leo just offset it, those adjustments. Now, by having a complete fight, having tape on it, now Carl Frampton can go back and watch the film and make more technical adjustments. He made some adjustments on the fly, but it would be more technical adjustments that he would make. I mean, I saw a flaw in the second fight that I didn't. First fight that Frampton did, and that was when it came time to escape, he was pulling straight back in the second fight compared to stepping around in the first fight.
So Scully, are those adjustments that, you know, I mean, like you said, Leo was able to make adjustments. Frampton wasn't making adjustments. In fact, you know, he was doing the same, you know, some of the same things he was doing during the first fight. So, you know, now, you know, kind of answer that, John. Am I right or wrong? I mean, is that a wrong assessment to make?
The whole thing in a rematch of a fight, you know, especially when it's a really good fight. I mean, and I wrote an article for Boxing News actually this week, before the fight. And what I said was, the thing is, when you watch a great fight, you know, the first fight was very good, and you know, when you watch a fight like that, as a fan and as a viewer, you'd like to see it again. But generally, as a fighter being in it, when you approach that rematch, you don't want to do that again. I mean, you know, the toll it takes on you, and, you know, believe me, it's not nearly as much fun being in it as it is watching it. And these guys, I'm sure, you know, adjustments are the name of the game. And I actually predicted, I thought that Frampton would adjust a bit, you know, to offset Leo. Leo, generally, when you get those pressure guys, they're not historically as good at adjusting in rematches. You know, that's pretty much what they do, you know, just coming forward straight in. And, you know, but Leo, apparently, I didn't see the fight, but apparently he adjusted better than Frampton did. You know, some guys, you know, they maybe Frampton expected the same fight and was caught off guard. And sometimes when you go in, you know, you could go into a fight, you know, you think about it, you're training for 6, 7, 8 weeks expecting. Sometimes you expect a certain way to go. You expect the fight to go a specific way, and you've got it in your head. Everything you do is geared towards that one thing. And then when you get in there and the guy follows you up, especially a guy who you might not have thought had the capability to do that, it's hard on the fly to counteract that. You know, the great ones have it, you know, but not everybody does. And, you know, this could be an indication of that. Maybe, I would assume that there's going to be a third fight, and that'll, you know, then we'll, again, just like this one, we're going to see who figures the other guy out and who adjusts. And, you know, that's why they need a great team great corner men, great trainers in the gym to figure this out. But Frampton obviously has some work to do before this third fight, if they have it.
Well, we now have the third member of our esteemed panel here, or at least my esteemed panel, that's the champ himself, Mr. Layman Brewster, Layman Relentless Brewster. Layman, what's going on tonight?
Hey, man, how everybody doing?
Everything's good, LB.
Right on.
We were just talking about Frampton Santa Cruz rematch. Layman, what was your assessment of that fight?
Hold on. Okay, so I think I'm thinking about the other fight that was on. Frampton, no, I didn't get to see the Frampton. I was thinking about the other one with the
Francisco Vargas.
Yeah, man.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna talk about that too, Layman. But you know, I gotta ask you. When we're kind of talk about fighters making adjustments, and John was talking about, you know, how it is, you know, in a rematch, and I was saying that I thought that Frampton set himself up to fail, and by that I meant that he went in with more or less the same game plan, and he wasn't able to make adjustments like Leo was. You know, of course, you know, Leo fought a completely different fight, but I was saying that a true champion is the one that's able to make those adjustments on the fly. And, maybe I'm taking the wrong stance here, but when you try to bring the same playbook, it just seems to me that you're setting yourself up for failure. Maybe I'm wrong. Do I have the wrong point of view here?
Well, yes and no. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if he was able to be successful in winning his last fight convincingly the way he did it, well then, you know, logic says go back to that. But we don't know how much going into the fight it was in his heart, you know, because sometimes when you beat a guy, you feel like, oh, I know I can beat him. All I got to do is be in shape and show up, and not necessarily understanding that the guy that you beat before is going to really up his game. So sometimes it's kind of hard to guess how a rematch will turn out, you know. So I think that was probably the case. He underestimated his opponent.
Okay. All right. I can definitely understand that. LeBron did. I kind of make myself a little more clear rather than, you know, muddy up the water like I did the first time. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I understood what you were saying. I just think you've been a little critical on Frampton that it wasn't like he was in there with a club fighter. He was in there also with another world champion fighter, elite fighter in his division. So, you know, everything is not going to always work the way you want things to work. He made adjustments, and, you know, last night wasn't his night. I mean, you know, he went into the fight maybe a little overconfident, feeling that, you know, he beat him already. And you could tell by the way he approached the fight, how he was just saying, oh, well, I should beat him more convincingly the second time. So it wasn't like no fire really up under him to get up for the fight, like, oh, I really need to be on my P's and Q's. Now he's at the point where he's being pushed to the limit. Like, it's do or die for him. Like, hey, I can't afford to lose two fights in a row. I feel that I'm the superior boxer. I'm better than this guy. And let me focus and do what I need to do.
Scully, you know, now it's obvious that you know, Frampton is going to have to make some adjustments. But now that he's seen two phases of two different Leo, you know, he's fought basically two different Leo Santa Cruzes. The one that fought last night, you know, he came forward, you know, but, you know, yet and still, you know, he used his footwork. When Frampton tried to box in the corner, he couldn't. You know, he used a very, very good jab. So, John, when you talk about a rematch, but how do you get ready for a three-peat, knowing that the other boxer has already made adjustments to your style?
Well, you know, here's the overriding issue to me is that we always talk about these scenarios and possibilities with the assumption in mind that each guy would be capable of doing it. But the fact is, maybe Frampton's not capable of, you know, really adjust making. Maybe that's just him. Like, what everything we've seen from him, maybe that's it. You know, maybe that's it. Who knows? But I'm gonna give you an example, which I've been thinking about since the discussion first started. If you remember these two trilogies. Now, well, obviously, Gaddy and Ward. What was the least exciting fight of the three? It was the third fight. The reason being, Arturo adjusted so well. He boxed the third fight, which a lot of people, if you didn't see his fights with Tracy Harris Patterson, you had no idea he could box like that. The least exciting fight was the one where he adjusted so he did a complete 180. You know, the fans be damned. You know, he boxed. He really boxed. It was still an exciting fight, but he boxed and, you know, he won pretty convincingly. The other one, if you remember, the first fight with Vinny Paziens and Greg Haugen, great fight. Like, you know, tons and tons and tons of punches and fury. You know, it's a relentless fight. Second fight, same thing. It was very good. The third fight, Vinny, a lot of people didn't know he could box. Vinny got up on his toes. You know, he was like a Sugar Ray. He was moving around. He was slurring. You know, he didn't get into big exchanges. And he adjusted, you know, like crazy. And he won the fight easily. Haugen wasn't even really in the third fight. So Frampton, obviously, you know, the first fight was relatively close. The second fight he lost. So he's obviously going to need to be the guy who really makes a change, because Leo's already proven he could make a change, and he could probably make another change in the third fight. So Leo's going to have to prove that he's at that level, because there's little differences between say a great fighter and a really great fighter, or a good fighter, a pretty good fighter, and a really good fighter. And Leo, Carl, in the third fight, he's going to have a chance to show the people exactly where he stands in that realm, because it's obvious that even at his best in what he's shown so far, it hasn't been good enough to make a really clear, you know, decisive victory. So he's going to have to change something up, whether he has the capability or not. That's going to remain to be seen.
I know, I know you saw the scorecard. So did you agree with the scorecard? Did you think it was possibly or, you know, more out of reach than the judges had it?
Oh, no, that's a fair scorecard. I mean, 116, 112, I don't agree with the draw scorecard, but, 116-112, I'm not mad with that. I mean, both fighters was very respectable after the fight. Carl Frampton admitted saying, hey, it wasn't my night. The better man won. He made adjustments, and I'm ready for the third fight. And
I take my hat off to both fighters. Very classy. And something that Santa Cruz said in the post-fight, he said he had to keep talking to himself, thinking out loud, telling myself, don't fight, don't fight, don't fight, because he wanted to get in the phone booth with Frampton a lot of times, but he had to keep himself from doing that because he said that might have cost him the fight.
You know, anybody that knows you knows, you know, that you've been in that position probably a couple times. But then, you know, you've also, you know, been the guy to put a guy in the phone booth, you know, and make sure that he doesn't get out. So, how hard is it for a fighter, you know, in the middle of a round or you know, those few seconds when you know, a guy wants to engage with you, how hard is it for you to stick to your game plan and not, vary or cross that line until you're actually ready?
It can be difficult, man, because, you know, as a fighter, your game, and what I mean by game is, you know, it's like, especially if you know you can punch a little bit, you're willing to scrap with anybody toe-to-toe. But if you got a game plan, and you have to then be smart and recognize that there are more than one way to get to the top of a mountain. Perfect example. Excuse me. When I was coming up, when I was sparring in the gym with James Toney and all those guys, man, Lionel Butler, Lennox Lewis, Michael Moore, Jeremy Williams, I can go down the list, man. I realized that, yeah, I got youth on my side, and I can go in there and bang it out with those guys, but those guys are veterans of the game, man. And it would be a fool that would take a gun and walk out in an open field against a man who's crafty enough to know to stay behind a tree and pick a guy off. And what I'm saying is, in that case, you have to play your cards, man. You have to be patient, make yourself be patient, and be disciplined, and realize the art of fighting is the ability to hit without getting hit, not because I can take a punch, not because I can punch, but as I always refer to playing chess, you have to be patient enough with your pawns so that when you bring your queen out, it's one strike, one kill. You can't move your queen around, just jump her all around the board, because she'll find herself trapped by someone with true experience that will set your queen up to be taken as a sacrifice. So what I'm saying is, in these cases, man, patience is always a virtue in this game of boxing. And this is the thing that the fans don't really quite understand. And this is sometimes what I would be very critical of people who will make comments, like commentaries, who's never been punched in the face, because when they think a man should fight, that's really the time when he should box. When they think that he should box, then maybe that's the time he should really fight. But it all depends on the fight. It depends on the scenario. It depends on the opponent. If the opponent is known for being stronger in the later rounds, then you have to make those adjustments, you know. Whereas if you know he gets weaker in the later rounds, you know, the key is to find that weakness that he has and maximize on it. Or to go in a camp knowing what his best punch is and take it away from him. Because no fighter is ever going to go into a fight and say, oh, I know my right hand is my best punch, but you know what, this fight I'm going to make my left hand my best punch. You're always going to go back, when your back is to the wall, you're always going to resort back to the thing that got you to where you were to make that decision. And most times that just be the case. So, you know, it varies, man. With everybody, there's a different game to be played, a game of chess, that is, if, you know, your opening move, that is. So That's where I'll leave it.
If you did not see the fight this weekend, you have to go to YouTube or one of those and find the Garcia knockout last night. If that's not knockout of the year, already, I don't know what it is. But if you haven't seen the fight, you know, this is, oh, man, you know, beautiful and brutal all at the same time. You know, that's about the only way that you can describe it. Scully, hey, man, what's going on? Can you tell us, you know, what's going on up there in New England? I see there's more fights booked, and I know you're going to be going to join your guy pretty soon. What's going on with the Adventures of the Iceman?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm getting ready pretty soon to head up to Montreal with Arthur Bitabayev to help him get ready. You know, he's fighting Sullivan Barrera for the mandatory spot at light heavyweight. So, you know, biggest fight of his career, huge fight. I'm excited about that. I'm actually going to New York City this weekend to set up my site for my amateur boxing reunion. But on a personal note, I'll tell you a funny thing. Like, I know you follow my Facebook and you see I spar. You know, I still spar quite a bit. And, you know, I spar guys, you know, 20 years old, 21, you know, whatever the age is. But on a funny note, these guys in New York, a whole bunch of them, every Saturday, and I fought one of them on ESPN years ago, a guy by the name of Scott Lopec. Every Saturday, they all get together. You have to be 40 years old at least to attend. They get like 15 or 20 guys, all former fighters, 40 years and older, and they spar. They all just get together. They just put round after round in. So I'm actually heading to New York City this Saturday, and I'm going to get as many rounds in as I can with a whole bunch of guys, including my friend Scott, who I fought before. You know, so it's like a dream come true for a guy like me. I was actually talking to Marlon Starlin about it the other day, who's in his 50s now, former two-time welterweight champ. And when I told him about it, he actually, for a couple seconds there, he looked kind of excited. So I don't know if I'll be able to talk him into actually attending or not. But if I do, I'll let you know. But
I was Starlin's last sparring partner, man. Ask him about it.
Oh yeah. When was that?
Yeah. We was at Mickey Rourke gym when Freddie Roach was, before Freddie Roach made a name for himself. And Freddie
right,
was
okay,
training.
Okay, well, Mucci retired. His last fight was in 91, but he came back. I remember he came back a few years later, and he went to L.A. with Freddie. So it must have been that. I'll tell you a funny thing I do remember. I remember De La Hoya wasn't, you know, extremely well known at the time, but he was in the gym. I don't know if you were there that day, but they said De La Hoya was in the gym, and Mucci said to Freddie, "Oh, let me box with that kid." And Freddie told him, "Nah, you don't want that. You don't want that. Like, we're gonna hold off on that kid for now." And it turned out it was Oscar De La Hoya. I don't know if that was the same time you were with him. Mucci. You know, it's funny. I'm not surprised that he sparred with you, because even like when he fought Breland for the title, one of his sparring partners was Philip Brown, who was actually, if you remember, Phil Brown was like a fringe contender. He was about 6'4", 225 pounds, and Mucci was only 147, but he was actually one of Mucci's sparring partners for the Breland fight.
Wow, yeah, I was like 190. I was on the U.S. Olympic team. No, I hadn't even made the U.S. Olympic team, and it was 91 at that time because Freddie Roach was training at it was Mickey Rourke's gym. It's called Outlaw Boxing Gym in Santa Monica.
Right.
And so one day, like 2 years ago, I was with Marvin Starling, and we're somewhere, and there's a whole bunch of other champs. And he was saying, "Yeah, man, I was out in L.A. and I was about to make a comeback. And Freddie put me in a ring with this guy, and we sparred, hit me with a body shot. Man, I said, forget that. I ain't fighting no more. I retired." And I said, "Huh?" I said, was you at Mickey Rourke gym with Freddie Roach? She said, "Yeah." I said, "That was me you sparred with." Man, his eyes got so big.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you one thing I do know. I do remember he said to me, I don't know if it was about that day or what, but there was a couple different times he had talked about coming back. And he said, He said, one time I was going to make a comeback, and I got in the ring to spar, and I worked out, and I felt good, and then I was in bed for 4 or 5 days. He said I was so sore, and that just turned him off to it. It was just too much of a mountain to climb. So, I'll see him in the gym tomorrow. I got to ask him about that. But, I'll be going tomorrow with these guys, and then like I say, I'll tell you a couple of things. I'm gonna set up my spot for the reunion Saturday in New York City. Then I'm gonna go. I think I told you before. I actually, when Sugar Ray Robinson first moved to New York City, where he moved, I'm gonna go with a friend of mine. I'm gonna show him where that was. I'll probably go to Harlem, and I'm gonna go to the church where it used to be a gym called the Salem Crescent Athletic Club in Harlem, where that's where Sugar Ray Robinson started boxing, actually. And I'm going to go there. So, I have a good boxing weekend planned this coming Saturday.
Well, don't forget to put a bunch of pictures up there, because you know I do, you know, I do follow you, and I do put them, you know, spread them around,
sir,
the internet.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to have, live. I'll probably go live from the whole thing. So, yeah, don't worry. I'll take care of everything. You'll see it all.
All right, my man. As usual, good to have you on, and I hope you can give us a few minutes next week, or you know, maybe if you're not in Montreal, you can tell us a little bit about how the sparring went down there in New York. So thanks as always.
All right, that sounds good.
Look forward to
it. All right,
you,
fellas, have a good show, and I'll talk to you next week. All right.
All right, my man.
All right, thank you. All right.
Yeah. That's Iceman Scully. As usual, always glad to have Scully on talking to us. Layman, did you happen to see the Mikey Garcia knockout? Layman? I might have lost him.
I didn't hear you.
I said, did you happen to see the Mikey Garcia knockout?
I did see the knockout. I saw the last 30 seconds. He destroyed him, man. The entire fight.
You kind of went out on us there, Layman.
I said I got to watch a couple of previews of the fight. It looks like he just dominated him. It was a great looking fight. Great fighter.
Javon, what did you think about that knockout? Knockout of the year?
It was a great knockout. I mean, it'll be candidate, but we got a long road ahead, and I think it's definitely going to be some more spectacular knockout in the near future.
All right. From your mouth to the old man's ear upstairs, man, because I'd be looking forward to seeing a few more knockouts like that. Layman, once again, this is my show, so I can kind of raise, controversy, and I'm known for, throwing some shit out there and seeing where it sticks. But I want to know what you guys, once again, I'm just showing, how old I am and thinking about conspiracies and all that. But I find it rather interesting that the same week that Oscar De La Hoya gets pulled over for a possible DUI out here in Pasadena, is the same week that all of a sudden lawsuits are settled with PBC, and there's, one of the rumors is because, supposedly, due to Oscar's condition, he missed one of the signings or some hearing, something that was very trivial that caused this lawsuit to be dismissed. Do you guys think there's any, you know, connection between the two, or am I just, you know, I mean, either way, you know, we get to see great boxing, but am I just reaching here?
Gerard?
You could be reaching just a little bit. Just looking at the forecast of what he's trying to do with the ESPN schedule, and his schedule isn't that great. I mean, he's trying to rebuild it. So I feel like they looked at it like we have to go across the aisle. Bob Arum has done it. And in this potential for some great, great fights in the next year to two. So I think that was more of a business decision than anything more just personal problems or anything of that sort.
Lane, what do you think? Because, you know, part of that was that, you know, they had a sealed, you know, basically Al's character, you know, saying that, you know, he didn't have the good of the fight game. He hadn't been able to fill his obligations, you know, and I mean, you know, like Jabron said, you know, he just got this 48 fight thing with ESPN. He's trying to rebuild that back up. He's just re-signed. I think he re-signed Rigondeaux. I think it was Rigondeaux he re-signed. You know, so he's definitely trying to build, you know, his side back up. Do you think maybe he lost his leverage, Landon? Or, you know, like Jabron said, I'm just reaching.
Yeah, I think it's a reach, man. You know, timing is everything, and that's the thing, man, about the truth. You know, the truth, it defends itself. And I don't know, he was standing right, and he knew what he was doing. He's a very smart man, and he wouldn't just jump out there and put himself in harm's way. That would be an insult to anybody that went to Harvard. And I just think at the end of the day, it all comes down to the timing of it all, man. I mean, things happen, and God don't like ugly, and Oscar getting caught up in that, man, it wasn't a coincidence, you know, in my opinion, because, you know, why would you try to stop a guy like Al Heyman, who's out here trying to help these fighters? Why would you stop him just so that you can make money when he's out here trying to make money for the fighters? And, you know, it's just God's timing, God's will. And that's just the way I think of it.
As always, like I said, you know, I'm gonna throw some out there, see what sticks. But you know, one of the things that I noticed, you know, while everyone is talking about, you know, the TV schedule and whatnot, you know, if you look at the fight schedule now, I mean, just last weekend, even though we had the fights on HBO and Showtime. We also had, you know, fights in Studio City, California. We had, of course, fights in Philly, fights in Atlantic City, fights in Montreal. To me, you know, I mean, people talk about, you know, that boxing is dead, and I've been kind of guilty of saying that, you know, boxing seems to be dwindling in some cities, but when you look around, you know, you see boxing, you know, in all these different cities. You see that they're young men, you know, some of them are only 6 and 8 rounders, you know, not quite ready for the pros or not. But how much of an influence, you know, is it, you know, or how much encouragement is it? I'll put it like that. How much encouragement should fans have when they see how much boxing we have, you know, on a local level, and guys still fully engaged? Layman, I'll go to you, go with you there first, because you know, you're even talking about, you know, the lower going to the amateur levels. So, you know, how much do we need these club fights in order to keep our game going?
These club fights is where it began, man. I mean, every last one of us has fought in club fights at some point in our career. Even Oscar De La Hoya, even Floyd Mayweather, Shane Mosley. There's no fighter that didn't fight in club fights. All the club fights are to help you to develop. So all we're doing, if you want to look at it from that standpoint, is we're just for a flower to develop. I mean, boxing's not dead. It's by far dead. You got too many good fighters out here for it to be dead. Now, has anybody emerged yet? No, not yet. But the season's not here yet. I think by spring, by the summer, we beat and seen a couple of fighters that we'd be like, okay, well, you know what? We're going to watch this guy. He's somebody to watch. You know, there's too many great fighters out here for us to sit back and say, oh, boxing is dead, because there's no indication whatsoever that boxing is dead whatsoever. Like, I'm willing to argue that with anybody. Show me case in point where boxing is dead.
You know, Jabron, you know, we've talked to Calvin Ford, you know, Gervonta Davis, you know, and you know, some other young kids from down there in the Baltimore area that, you know, I mean, hey, Gervonta is now a world champ. So, you know, how much should the fan be encouraged that we are getting these young kids, you know, such as Gervonta? You know, his rise was kind of meteoric. I mean, you know, no one, you know, he didn't have a lot of amateur fights. You know, he was mostly a local club fighter, and then all of a sudden he got his exposure to TV and he exploded. So to the fan, how important are these club fights to get these young guys out there and get them known, you know, and get them to move up, you know, to the TV side of it?
JK, to be honest, casual fan don't care about that. Casual fans worry about what's on HBO, what's on Showtime, and what's on pay-per-view. They're not really interested in the upcoming and upbringing of fighters and watching. They don't care about that. That's just a casual fan. Now, diehard fans, as me and you, we appreciate those things, but just for the millennials and the casual boxing fans, JK, they could care less.
I agree with that. I think.
Well, Layman, you know, my question to you is just a little bit different, because when we were coming up, you know, we had, you know, ABC Wide World of Sports, and every year you had, you know, the guys like Sugar Ray Leonard and the different guys that were coming up. I mean, we even had, you know, fights brought to televised from prisons. You know, I remember guys in Rahway used to be, you know, on TV and some of the different prisons from around the country. You know, and, you know, some of them didn't make champions, but, you know, some of the guys that they fought, you know, I mean, they were stepovers, more or less, you know, not stepovers, but I mean, you know, rungs in the ladder. I mean, they were, you know, they were good enough to get on TV. So guys knew, you know, they knew the young amateurs. They knew the guys that were coming out from the New York Golden Gloves and things like that, because our generation saw them, you know, off on a weekly or a yearly, monthly basis, you know, however you, you know, when you want to look on TV. And these were some of the you know, the shows that you look forward to. Usually they were showing during, you know, the winter season in between baseball and football, you know, you, with the Winter Olympics and things like that. So, Layman, as TV, sort of, I mean, you know, there's so many things on TV that now, you know, boxing can't afford TV anymore?
No, not at all. I don't think that's the case. Yeah, there are plenty of things on television, but that all goes back to the promoter. You know, really, at the end of the day, just marketing that fighter and his stable, you know, really getting him out there, maybe getting him on some television shows, you know. You got to change. You got to evolve with evolution, and I think that it's all about evolving, just like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter are new for fighters, where now you don't even have to be a well-decorated amateur now to make some decent money in this sport. You have to have a media following. And I think that it all falls down at the end of the day to the promoter promoting the shows, promoting that fighter to get him out there in the eyes of the general public.
Jabron, what's your thoughts on the exposure? Is it you know, that boxing can't afford TV anymore, or is, you know, are there so many sports on TV that TV can't afford boxing anymore, except for on the major league level?
I wouldn't say they can't afford it in a sense, but, I mean, it's not a priority when you have 1,000 other things that's accumulating income for these large corporations, you know. Me growing up, I never seen chess and poker on primetime TV where, you know, now it's taking a slot, or law cutting and different things of that sort that was only on smaller markets, local stations. But you're not going to find that on a primetime network as of now. When you turn on your TV, you got World Series of Poker, these different things, ping pong. So it's so many different entities that's coming into the equation where these companies can capitalize on smaller sports, and they have a nice following. So, you know, whereas boxing, they can't sit and wait around for, oh, it's a great time in boxing now. Let's do it, you know, because boxing, we can honestly say, has been inconsistent within, what, the last 30 years. It has its ups, it has its downs, where other sports has evolved and you know, surpassed boxing.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, because that was going to be, you know, my next thing. I mean, you know, when you can see, you know, the World Series of Poker, of course, you know, I mean, hey, now, you know, I can't say that I'm not one of those guys who like to watch a little poker every now and then. I mean, you know, Sam Garcia, you know, I mean, he plays in a lot of events, and sometimes I get on to watch him and whatnot. But, you know, but when you got, you know, college lacrosse and, you know, some sports, you know, I mean, you know, now you have so many other sports, like you mentioned, LeBron. You got table tennis, you know, you got the you know, 1AA basketball tournaments. I mean, you know, there was a time when all of these things took a backseat to boxing, but now it seems either boxing doesn't want to put forth either marketing, you know, you know, that was another thing that kind of turned me off to the whole Al Heyman thing, because you know, you could tell when they were talking prices to one party and talking prices to a different party, but still giving you the same reasons. Now, 2 days ago, which would have been the 27th, Frampton was named Fighter of the Year by the Boxing Writers Association. Do you think that that if the vote had been made today, it would be the same? Do you think possibly, you know, when you talk about making the adjustments, you know, there was you know, some other fighters that might have been overlooked in that Boxing Writers Fighter of the Year. I'm gonna start with you there, LeBron.
No, it wouldn't have mattered because this is 2017. You can't look at something today and judge something from last year. So it wouldn't have, my opinion, it shouldn't have mattered. Would it have mattered? Possibly in some people's eyes. But in my eyes, no, that should not matter, the outcome of the fight over the weekend, because, like I said, that is for the fight of the year of 2016, not 17. Your thoughts, champ?
Well, first of all, wait a minute. Now, don't run so fast now, because if you, you know, there was a second part to that question. Do you think that Frampton have necessarily been your winner of Fighter of the Year?
Well, it wasn't my fight of the year from the get go. So,
who would have been your fight of the year?
Oh, my fight of the year. Like I said, my fight of the year is Porter versus Thurman. I have my reasons because of the skill level. People want to see blood, sweat, and tears and guts. But once again, this is boxing, hit and not be hit. They both got hit. They both made adjustments. The better man just won that night. And you just see boxing at its best on that type of level with skills.
I agree with that.
Who was your fighter of the year, if not Frampton?
I agree with Jabbar. I totally thought it was Thurman, the Thurman fight. It was a great fight, man, and you had two of the top fighters fighting, and it's like, what more could you ask for? They both gave 100%. They both took some great shots, and this isn't a matchup that you get to see on a regular basis. So I definitely thought that they should have got the fight of the year.
Now, after all of the boxing writers were talking about how great the Kovalev Ward fight was,
That wasn't a great fight. What was great about that fight? I mean, you had two skilled dudes, but they didn't show anything spectacular.
But what I'm talking about is, this is the Boxing Writers Award for Fight of the Year.
Uh-huh.
They had major headlines. Now, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was major headlines. This fight was, you know, even though it was here in the U.S., I mean, this fight had major complications. They were talking about it all over in England and whatnot. And, you know, then after the fight, you know, everybody, you know, was talking about how skilled Ward was and whatnot. But yet and still, these same people that congratulated Ward, don't you find it a little hypocritical that all of a sudden after that fight that Frampton was all of a sudden, you know, fight of the year? Or, you know, once again, am I guilty of conspiracy theories here? I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, I think. Go ahead, champ.
No. Go ahead, Jabron. Please.
Well, I mean, both of those fights. Okay, you're speaking Kovalev and Ward. With that, there wasn't a decisive winner in the fight. You know, and it's controversy. How can that be a candidate or be the fight of the year when you can't even come up with the winner? You know what the judge scorecard says, but the popular vote, what they're saying. So I couldn't mix that in with fight of the year. Whereas the Keith Thurman Porter fight, you know who the winner was, and it was no controversy, and you both saw the skill levels and the respect for one another after the fight.
All right, let's take the conspiracy level the other way then. From the true boxing fan, and I believe the diehard boxing fan would have also picked Keith Thurman for Fighter of the Year. I could probably think of a couple others. For Fighter of the Year. And I just find it very hypocritical to talk about two African-American fighters in that breath, but yet and still, when it comes to Fight of the Year, all of a sudden it seems like their fights are forgotten. We have...
You know what it is.
Me and Layman need to curse you out because you beating around the bush, J.K., because, yeah, you get on us, and you beating around the bush.
As he would say, come on now, keep it 100. This is my show now.
You say it here.
Come on, hey, don't turn into Jesse Johnson right now.
You're right. If you were trying to be all politically correct, I'd have both feet in it. You're right. So, don't you find it some bullshit that we got, a Caucasian, a guy, and even more, even more hypocritical. You had to go all the way to England to find a guy for boxing, the Boxing Writers Fighter of the Year. I mean, when Al and different guys talk about, how the boxing media, has been rather fraudulent, I think this is an example of it. So, being 100, like you said, don't you see at least two brothers being able to make a case for Fighter of the Year? The only one that Frampton really beat was Leo Santa Cruz. Not saying that was, wasn't a good feat, not saying Jabron, the fight, the Garcia knockout, we're going to see a whole lot more fighting. Well, I thought we saw a whole lot better fights during 2016 rather than Frampton. So, am I wrong? Do you guys, am I part of the conspiracy here? That unless a brother gets, what a brother got to do to be Fighter of the Year? He got to get, four knockouts, and all of them got to, and he got to knock Canelo out in every bout. I mean, what's the deal? Why can't why aren't the brothers getting the respect in 2016 that I think they deserve?
Well, Five words, man. Five words. You ready? Pen and paper? Because you might need to write this one down. You ready, Jabron? I'm going to go real slow so you can write fast. Right complexion for the protection. I mean, let's just go back to horse racing. All the great horse racing, all the great horse racers, jockeys that were black, you never heard nothing about them until the white dudes start becoming these now jockeys that were trained by these black jockeys. And now all of a sudden these horse jockeys got more fame than ever. But we don't, you know, we going to just forget about the past. We just going to talk about right now. We just going to talk about right this minute. And it is what it is, man. You know, I mean, we can sugarcoat it, but you gave me the courage and the confidence, and I thanked you for that day, because I was trying to ice skate around the truth, and you brought it out to me. Hey, man, it is what it is. And, I mean, hey, anybody can argue, but you know, like you said, it is what it is. The proof is in the pudding, you know. Frampton ain't – who is he, you know, who is he really beat this year, or last year, rather, and now all of a sudden he's fighter of the year or whatever that was. So, you know, hey, man, I call a spade. Thank you, JK.
Champ hit it right on the head. He hit it right on the head. Before we go, what's going on, Champ? What's your heavyweight division, man? It's like nobody want to fight Deontay without being juiced up, man. What's going on, man? Like,
well, you know, man, it's a travesty. It's really a shame that these fighters have to resort to that they don't have enough confidence in themselves to go out and win a fight, man. And again, that's just another, I guess, change of the times, man, where these fighters all feel like this is what they need to do in order to be the great fighter, because they obviously ain't got the balls to step it up and let it all hang out. You know, they gotta have some type of cheating mechanism, if you will, you know. And sadly to say, I'm glad it's been exposed, because truthfully, I'm just going to say it. European fighters have been cheating like that against American fighters for a very, 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 very long time. And, you know, let's just get that out in the open. This ain't nothing new, but what is new is that they are stepping up with regulations and they're enforcing it. But, I mean, if you go back through history, man, it's been a lot of times where you had these European fighters, in both cases with Deontay, where, you know, these guys felt like they needed to cheat to win.
Yeah, you know, like you told us that, you know, before about, you know, some of your experiences over there in Europe and how things you know, have how things went for you over there. You know, when you talk about juicing, Layman, you know, it you know, and I'm you know, I'm the same way about football players too, because, you know, I mean, we've seen it in baseball, you know. There's technology now, you know what I'm saying, and this is where I'm going with this. If a guy's got enough money to get juiced, in this day and age, with all the different masking agents and whatnot, are these guys just too stupid or too cheap, or just, you know, just, I mean, I'm not condoning either one, but I'm just saying, you know the saying about technology. I mean, LeBron, you know, what do you think there? I mean, to me, that's the only reason why a guy would get caught, you know, unless he's just blatantly cheating and he don't give a damn.
Well, misinformation. I can honestly say that misinformation, that I can just speak on personal experience, as being a teenager you know, growing up thinking I knew everything and could try to beat the system and get away. And listening to some people, I didn't take the correct medications and supplements that I needed to take to pass a test, and I had to face the consequences, you know. So I can say, you know, misinformation can get you caught up in some mess.
Yeah. Well,
when somebody tell you, hey, don't worry, it'll be just 12 days and you're clean, you're good, and you go and you find out that it's 30 days or 45 days. So you thinking, hey, I'm good, and you go and take the test, and now you sitting there like, that's a mistake. We got to retake that test over.
Oh, man.
So what you guys think about the list, the VADA list? And I was surprised to see Sergio Kovalev and Tim Bradley on the list who has not signed up for VADA.
And you were surprised why?
I was surprised with Kovalev. It was a little on the fence, but Kovalev, I was kind of shocked with that one. Not with all that, you know, crusher mentality and, you know, and he's supposed to have been the most feared fighter and all this stuff and all this. Just everything with him that I just find that was hard for him not to be signed up for, and him and his promotional company to, you know, just be speaking so, you know, so great of Sergio.
So you're saying, because I think I missed it. Now you said signed up for who?
VADA, random all year round testing. There's a list that the WBC put out yesterday, and there's a list of every weight division, all of the fighters that are not signed up with VADA. And matter of fact, the guy who knocked out Vargas last night is on the list, so I advise his team, they better have that boy tested.
Now, where did they fight? They fought here. They fought out at Indio, right?
I'm not sure. They fought in California,
fought,
right?
He fought out here in Indio. Pat Russell was one of the judges. Don't worry. If he's out in California, when he got done, there was somebody beside him all the way to the dressing room. Layman, you can speak to the regulations out here in California.
Oh yeah, man. I definitely can. They're definitely on their job out there, man. I even had to tell the dude one day I had fought. I forget where that fight was, but I was like, man, do you just want to, like, look at my penis? Because, like, the way you stand is, like, you think I got something. like, you think I got a bottle of butter balls or something? Like, man, you doing your job just a little too much.
Yeah, I here in California, you know, we've had the commissioner, the executive, guy on a couple times, and you know, Pat and those guys. Yeah, Pat was a judge down there last night. So, out here, if he's dirty, he's gonna be real good to get away with it. So,
won't know until about a month later or two before they even decide to try to come out with the information.
Oh yeah. Now that part is true, but that's before you'll know. Believe me, he'll know before that. The public might not know, but he'll get one of them little pink slips in the mail. Well, it won't even be in the mail. You know, California Commission won't see you, or you know, according to our records, you know, yeah. it might be a little while before we know.
Did you get the chance, JK, to look at the list?
No, I looked at it before, but I didn't really pay attention, that much attention to who wasn't on the list. I'm not sure what we were talking about, but I'm pretty sure I looked at it a few weeks ago, and I was, that's why I asked you, why were you that much surprised at those particular names? I mean, some of them, you said, I mean,
champ. For your heavyweight division, we have Mr. King Kong Ortiz, Gerald Miller, and David Price that's on that list that's not signed up for random drug testing.
Wow.
Earl Spence is on the list. Mr. Errol Spence is on the list.
I think Errol Spence, there's a couple guys. What site are you on?
This is the boxing scene. It has a weight division from heavyweight all the way down to, wow. I didn't even know they had a weight division called minimum weight. Wow. It's called minimum weight. Then it's, after that, it's light flyweight. So, wow, it's dope. Hold on. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wow.
We already know, more or less, what you said, as far as, across the pond, but, is that a WBC list?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can, with the way that the WBC is talking about, scaling down the divisions, not having five champions, and making. I think they're also about to make the beta testing mandatory. Layman, right now, do you think that the WBC is starting to make these major decisions, and how long do you think it's going to be before the other divisions, the IBF and the WBA, and how long before they more or less have to go along with these tests or make them mandatory, and how much better is it for the game to have everybody tested before every fight?
I think it's crucial
that's at any time. It doesn't have to necessarily, you don't even have to necessarily be fighting, right?
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think it's great, man. I mean, we need that, man, because, we want to try to protect the fighter as much as possible when, I've had fights where I fought guys that I knew for a fact that they were on something, just for the simple fact that I've hit them with punches that I knew that nobody could take. You know what I mean? Like being able to judge my power and the fact that they could even recover. I knew they were on something, only to find out, years later from an associate of theirs or somebody close to theirs, now that the dust has settled, that they actually did take something. So, just to keep it fair to everybody, because if you got a guy that's out there giving his all, man, he deserves that victory. And not because he don't deserve to lose because somebody cheated. That at the end of the day, man, that's just not cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking the same thing there. Getting back to the fights on HBO, Layman, you did say you got a chance to watch those, right?
Yes, sir.
So, who made the biggest impression on you last night? The guy that beat Vargas, or the fight before that?
What was the fight before that? Can you remember their names? I'm sorry.
Let's see. Who fought before Vargas and what's his name? I just had it up here.
Actually, the fight that I believe that I do want to say was the Vargas fight. Vargas was the one that lost, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
when his head was snapping back.
Yeah, with the bad gash in his eye, right?
Yeah.
Vargas had a bad cut.
Man, that was
a tremendous fight. I really take my hat off to both of them. They fought very, very hard. I think that Vargas probably could have fought better. I mean, I still think he was going to lose, but I think he probably could have fought better without that eye looking like it did. Man, that was a pretty gruesome cut that he had. And I really thought they actually should have stopped it a lot sooner than they did, which I'm really surprised about, man, because the more he got hit, the bigger it opened, and you know it could have potentially ended his career. Just don't know.
What did you think about the HBO fight?
I think it was great.
The fight before Raymond was the Japanese guy that was a great fight. I watched that. That was the fight before the Vargas fight.
Yeah, he came back and knocked him out in the 12th or the 11th.
11th. Yeah, I believe it was the 11th.
Yeah, it was a great fight. But overall, mine was the Mikey Garcia fight. That's what really grabbed me. Not just the physical fight itself, but what is in store going forward. He said he want anybody 35-40 after the fight. There was a little sparring going back and forth with Mr. Bud Crawford and Mikey Garcia, and hyped up by the NBA star point guard for the Portland Trailblazers, Damian Lillard. So he's helping hype up the fight. So we could possibly see a Crawford-Mikey Garcia fight later this year. So keep your eyes and ears open with that.
Were you surprised at Garcia's power, or do you think that was a matter of positioning and torque on the punch?
It was positioning and torque on the punch. I mean, Mikey has solid power, but if you look at his career, he's a guy who just breaks you down with accumulation and then gets you out of there later on in the fight. I think he averages around 8 or 9 rounds per fight. So, it wasn't a surprise. I know it was there. And it was just that I was shocked at his sharpness because, you know, it's supposed to be like a tune-up fight to get him back on the road. But he looked a lot sharper than I thought that he would look. So, my hat goes off to him, and I hope he has a big fight coming up soon, maybe with Bud or any of the top 135s out there?
Well, 135, 148, he called out for him, and he did look good last night. But he had a guy that was, you know, kind of hand-picked for him, I would like to say. A guy that you knew, unlike Leo, he definitely played the Frampton part. He didn't know how to adjust, and with Mikey, he didn't have that long to adjust. I think Mikey spotted his flaws really quickly, took advantage of it. And I don't know if you want to say lucky punch, but that was definitely more power than we have seen out of Mikey Garcia. But you know, maybe I'm looking at that wrong too. Layman, can you teach a guy? You know, I mean, when you teach a guy how to punch, does that increase his power?
Absolutely, man. Mechanics of punching is my specialty, and that is what I brand myself as. I'm not a trainer. I teach people to knock people out. That's what I do. That's what I've done since I was a kid. So I'm not going to teach a guy to go out there and necessarily teach him how to beat a guy boxing. I mean, you can, but my thing is, teach him the mechanics of how to punch, the 108 pressure points, 36 that'll kill you, and learning the tricks of a trade on how to take a guy's physical conditioning away from him, how to break him down mentally. That's where I'm at.
We're going to have to talk about that on a show where you can kind of, you can kind of tell us, we got a few minutes. I'm sure this is not, top secret yet. But when you watch a guy, for instance, are you familiar with Luis Ortiz at all, Layman?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
I'm familiar with him.
When you take a guy like Luis Ortiz, he's been under that Cuban program, and he's not really that fleet of foot. What do you bring to the table? What do you teach him on, how to make an opponent fight his fight?
Well, he has kind of a Sonny Liston type style. He's slow. I think he's a little methodical. But you just take what he got and you work with that, man. And it would depend on the type of opponent he's fighting. Is he fighting a runner? Is he fighting somebody coming forward? So it would all vary depending on who he's fighting, depending on what they're bringing to the table. But, I haven't seen enough of him outside of like one or two fights to really say what type of fighter he really is. He looks like he has heavy hands, but again, he's slow. But again, man, I don't know. It's hard to say. It would depend on who he's facing.
I realize that, every fighter brings his own, his own things to the table. So, let's see.
Champ, will you be in New York for the Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia fight?
I plan to. I'm going to say that much. I plan to. That's for sure.
Oh, I might get to run into you.
Yeah, man, I hope so.
I hope you'll be able to make it. If you did come, would you come the day of the fight, or will you be here the day before?
Or I'll beat her a couple of days before the fight, to be honest with you.
Well, definitely we have to keep in contact, because the night before the fight, there's a fan appreciation night. Just it's not open to the public. It's a private party. I'm going to be there, and a lot of fighters and trainers will be there, like Deontay Wilder, Tevin Farmer, and I got a list of a bunch of other people, but I am in the building. So if possibly we can get you in there with the other fighters, and it'll be great for the couple of fans that will be there at the event to meet a former heavyweight champion like yourself.
Yeah, man. I look forward to it, dude.
So I'll definitely shoot you some information about that.
Right on. Right on.
Before we get out of here, we see now that Rigondeaux is going to get back in the ring. He's no longer, of course, with Ronnie. I believe he has a trainer over across the pond now. And he's going to be fighting a kid named Chucky Flores. I don't know much about him. Haven't heard that much about him. But what do you think about Rigondeaux getting back in the ring? LeBron?
Oh, I think it's great. Can't wait to see him in action. It's not going to be an easy fight. I do know a little about his opponent. I've seen a couple of fights of him in the past. He's going to come ready to fight, bringing the fight. Overall, I think Rigondeaux have the skills to, beat the guy, but it's not going to be a walk in the park like, people would probably think, hey, they just putting him in there with anybody. Far from that. So I can't wait, because there are some potential fights there between 26 and 30 that can be made, and one of them could be Santa Cruz, it could be Frampton, it could be, possibly a rematch with Donaire if Donaire wants it, Lomachenko, Javante Davis. There's so much out there for him, so I'm just hyped to get him out there, because it seems like he's taking on a different angle at his boxing style. He's aiming to be a little more aggressive, which he was in his last fight, if you had the chance to check that footage out.
Yeah. Champ, your thoughts of Guillermo Rigondeaux returning back to the ring, as Jabron said, seemingly with a vengeance, man. I mean, he showed a lot more power, and he's not quite exhibiting that stiff up and down style that he used to bring, he's a great champion. So, champ, what's it like for another champ to finally get back in the ring?
Well, man, if he, he's rested, I'm pretty sure that he knows where he's at in his career, and as far as how crucial it is for him to make a good showing and everything. So I think that he's going to bring a lot of excitement and experience back with him. I think you're going to probably see a refreshed Rigondeaux. And I think he still got some fight in him.
Yeah. We can definitely see, like you said, if you watch that last footage, he does definitely have a lot of fight left in him. So, I'm looking forward to seeing him back in the ring. And hope, you said, Jabron, this guy is a good test for him. Champ, I'm going to let you go out first. Give us your final thoughts for the evening, and tell people where they can find you on social media.
Well, thank you as always, JK. I appreciate you and Jabron, man, allowing me to come and, run my mouth with you guys, man, and talk about this game that I love so much, the game that has basically saved my life, that allowed me to escape my environment, I just say to people, always support boxing, man, because, there are a lot of people out there that are not necessarily college material. Not to say the college is a bad thing, But, you know, for me personally, man, fighting was God sent for me. So continue to support this show. Continue to support boxing. You can follow me at Lamon Brewster, LamonBrewster. That's at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you, JK.
Well, thank you, champ. We look forward to talking to you next week. And, hey, man, I can't wait for you guys to hook up because, you know, I expect some pictures and some video and all that good stuff. Langan act like he's going to even forget us people out here on the West Coast. But, you know, as long as he's spreading the word, it's all right. It's all right. Yeah. All right, Jabana, hey, man, tell us what's going on up here in Brooklyn. Any final words you might have for us and where they can find you on social media, my man?
Well, now we have the new Gleason's open. You can go to their website and check out the dates for it. They have boxing clinics coming up. They're going to have the first female boxing clinic of the year coming up real soon in the next month or two. Don't have the exact date, so definitely hit their website to support amateur and upcoming boxing in the community. And thank you, JK, for having me as your co-host, and thank the listeners who listen, and the champ and Scully. And just keep supporting boxing. We jumped off to a great year this year of boxing. Let's keep that movement going. And you can find me on Facebook, Jabran Clemon, JABRANCLEMON. And to the next episode, JK, let them know where they can find you.
Well, you can look on Facebook. You'll find me on The Pugilist Corner. That's Facebook backslash The Pugilist Corner. Corner spelled KORNER. You can also find me on Twitter at West Coast Steeler Fan, and also The Sports Crib. So, I have to thank you guys, Jabran and Scully and my heavyweight champions for supporting me and, coming on my show every week. And, we all love the same game, and, we're just doing our best to be ambassadors for the sport and, tell them like it is. So,
we're missing this week, Chris Bird.
Next week, Chris is supposed to be here next week. I've been trying to get Chris on, one week, it seems like it's a cousin conspiracy, you know. One week we got one cousin, one week we got the other cousin, but don't worry, Jabron. We gonna get them back. We gonna get them on together, my man. Speaking of that, we hope to have Boyd Nelson on this week, along with a man, young prospect that's going to be fighting. I believe he's fighting on February 2nd, and that would be Mr. Ryan Carl, another one of Ronnie Shields' prospects, and we'll have the whole lineup to you sometime, hopefully Monday. So have a great night, everyone, and we'll see you next week. And don't forget to catch us Tuesday nights on the Pugilist Corner. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.